With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The final seconds will tick down as the Boston Celtics come up with a 40-point fourth quarter and a stunning double-digit comeback to rally and win Game 1 of the NBA Finals on the road. Celtics take it 120-108 over the Golden State Warriors.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. B-Mac is behind the glass filling in for Brendan Riley. That didn't sound like my favorite Killer Bee, Mike Breen. On the finals call.
What was very weird, I was mentioning this to Lisa last night watching the game. They put social media out there, or there was social media out there yesterday during the day that said, look for Mike Breen's return to the telecast after missing Game 7 of the Miami-Boston series. And then all of a sudden, when they threw from the studio with Mike Greenberg and the whole crew to the court, I was like, well, that's not Mike Breen. And then Van Gundy wasn't there either. And if you remember Game 7, Van Gundy tried to do the game, but he was definitely not feeling well.
Really?
He wasn't himself. And you got to wonder if there's a certain kind of virus going through the ABC telecast.
So Jordan had his flu game. This could have been the Breen COVID game.
Could have been.
If he would have given it a go and given it a try. Although the worldwide leader wasn't going to have that. I think the sound tech was out with COVID, too.
You tweeted it. You were so right.
And that was bizarre.
Lisa was saying the same thing. So the first thing, it started during the intro video that Magic Johnson narrates, and you missed a good minute and a half of the audio.
Oh, Magic narrated it?
Yeah, he narrated. So they picked it up as he was in kind of the last stages of the intro script. And then once they went to like the second break of the first quarter, I was like checking my TV at first, but it was like, so the main audio of on the channels of audio, the main audio, whoever's in the commercial was off, but the background noise and the effects mics or audio was up from commercials. Then they go back and Lisa Salters, you can hear the crowd noise. You can hear the guys talking on the bench, but you can't hear Lisa Salters report. And I'm like, uh-oh, someone's not doing their job very well today.
Even on the commercials.
That's what I'm saying.
It was so weird. Like, how does that happen, though, where you get half the sound on the commercials and then half the main part of the sound not?
You get the
like
Nissan chick, whatever. I guess she's been in movies, too. But the blonde Nissan
Brie
chick.
Brie Larson, I think it
was. Yeah, that does all the, we're from the all-terrain vehicle to the sports car. And here she is. Look, you know, basically doing lip singing without any audio. She's just talking away. You don't hear her, but you hear the shoom of the car, and you hear the music building in the background. It's like, what's going on?
Yeah, it was really weird. Then they played basketball, though. Golden State, it was like the tell of two games, really. I thought the first quarter was pretty much dominated by Golden State, but then Boston finished on the big run. Boston would come around in the second quarter, actually took a halftime lead. So when you hear Draymond Green said that they dominated for 42 minutes, not necessarily the case since they were trailing at halftime. Golden State did what they normally do, where they have a tremendous third quarter. They come out of the locker room hot. It looked like they were on their way to a double-digit victory. Everything that Joe Fortenball told us was true. Joe Fortenball was going to make me some money, and I believed in Joe Fortenball. I'm not worried about that at all. But then the Celtics just absolutely blow out the Warriors in the fourth quarter. They outscored Golden State 40-16. 40-16 in the fourth quarter.
It's one thing to say you allowed 40 in a fourth quarter, in any quarter. You allowed a 40 piece, but on top of the 40 piece, you only scored 16. Like, that is just not acceptable for any NBA team, let alone in an NBA Finals.
Yeah, that was quite the game. I look back at this because I thought Golden State was going to win a very tight series, and I hate to be prisoner in the moment. I just don't see a way that Golden State can win this series. I still think it's going to be tight. I still think it's going to be a long series. But on a night where Steph Curry was absolutely on fire in the first quarter, had a very good game, was a big reason that they had such a big third quarter, you know, getting inside the lane, drawing the defense, finding some open shooters. And then you had Boston, who Jason Tatum did not play well. Wait, I shouldn't say that. He didn't shoot well. 3 for 17 from the floor, 1 of 5 from three. The role players came up big, absolutely, but I don't expect Steph Curry to be that good night in, night out. I don't expect Jason Tatum to be that bad at a shooting night, night in, night out. Yet Boston won by a dozen points in a game in which their best player didn't shoot well. I don't know about Golden State, man. I don't know about Golden State.
I do. I still have total confidence. I'm not jumping off the bandwagon as quick as you are. I just believe, look, I mean, they're a very well-coached team. They have enough talent that this is something that's not insurmountable. I believe they can come back. I'm very surprised because the first thing I was curious about was the defense on Curry and was he going to still be able to get his, because I really believe Marcus Smart, and not just by the numbers that say over the last 3 years he's the best defender on Curry one-on-one. I believe that Boston's help defense and the way they play defense was going to give Curry trouble. And then he goes for 21 in the first quarter, and you're like, okay, well, if he's not having trouble, I'm not too worried about Golden State. And I ended up falling asleep in the fourth quarter, right start of the fourth quarter. And when I woke up, I was like, oh, my God, what happened? And, you know, the Celtics were raining threes. The Warriors couldn't find any way to do what they needed to do. They weren't executing. They weren't making shots, and they weren't winning the game. But I still believe that they will be back, because as good as Boston's been, their track record in this playoffs is that they hot and cold.
True.
One game they go completely nuts, and the next game they can't find the bottom of the basket, even from short range. So I'll wait to pass judgment and change my pick. I totally believe the Warriors are not only still in this series, I still firmly believe they're going to win it.
Yeah, see, I don't think that they're out of the series. I'm changing my pick. I'm going to be a prisoner of the moment. I think Boston's going to win this series. The fact that they did that with Tatum shooting poorly, with Curry playing as well as he did, and you mentioned the talent, which, look, Golden State is still very talented, but they're a shell of what they were. I mean, Klay Thompson is not the same player of what he was. He's clunky. He doesn't move nearly as well. He's basically a catch-and-shoot guy now. They can't even get him going off of screens. Like, he's catch-and-shoot. That's it.
But see, this is what I've said, too. I mean, I'm not going to say what you just said, because I believe that the crux of why Golden State isn't completely what they used to be is Klay Thompson. And I also said that just like an ACL injury or anybody coming off a major injury, you're really not yourself again trying to gauge if you can get back to where you were for a full year. Mm-hmm. So he's not going to be. And we've seen it because he's been so up and down this whole playoffs. I think where the problem lies is a guy that they started to rely on more heavily in Jordan Poole disappeared. Another guy who started to pick up some of the weight left behind by Klay Thompson in Wiggins has not been consistent. So now you're looking, and you can't expect Draymond Green to be the kind of guy that picks up the load for double-doubles and things like that.
I was banging my head on the wall watching Draymond Green play basketball yesterday. How many times was he going to sag off of Al Horford and let him have wide open baseline jumpers? How many times was he going to sag off Al Horford and let him have wide open threes? He was driving me crazy on the defensive side of the ball.
It was a little bit baffling because of the way he's always in tune with switches and closeouts on jump shots, that he did what he did, especially because it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a scouting report. If you watched any of the playoffs, you know, Al Horford was knocking down threes the entire playoffs. The other thing that was frustrating to me was he was making the right cuts in the might and in the break, filling the right lanes, and he wasn't finishing. He was James Hardening it. He was looking for the call. When he didn't get it, he was lagging behind, trying to bitch about it. And Boston was turning it around, going the other way, and he was lagging behind.
See, he shot the ball 12 times yesterday. I feel like that was 10 times too many. And you're right, he doesn't finish at the rim very well anymore. He's never really had amazing athleticism, so he doesn't finish above the rim. And if you're not finishing above the rim in the NBA, sometimes it can be tough to finish at the rim. I thought Boston made a great adjustment on Steph Curry, too. I know Curry still finished with 34. 21 of those came in the first quarter, though. They had a terrible defensive game plan for Steph Curry in that first quarter.
Yeah, they really did.
They were going under screens. You had times when Robert Williams was trying the hedge, but it wasn't a hard hedge. He was sagging off basically to the elbow. They were giving Steph Curry a lot of good looks. And with Steph Curry, in my opinion, I'm curious how you feel about this too. I'm not letting him beat me from three. If I chase him off the three-point line and he's getting easy layups, I'm willing to live with that. You have to pick your poison with Steph Curry. He's that good of an offensive player. But I'm forcing him off of the three-point line. I'm forcing him to either finish at the basket or to be able to kick to his teammates near the basket.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that philosophy. But I think from Boston's defensive philosophies in the first quarter, It's one thing to say they're going to run high pick and roll on you, and you've got to show. You have to show and over exaggerate.
Oh yeah, hard.
He doesn't use that screen like most players to use it to rub a guy off and go all the way through it. He stops midway through the pick, and that's all the space he needs to get the three off. And Smart was frustrated by whoever was showing on the other side of the pick, wasn't even getting a hand up, wasn't even kind of over exaggerating to get out on him. And then, like you said, the other thing is like the way James Harden was stopped in his heyday. What you really do when they run that high screen and roll is whoever's guarding Curry stays on his back pocket. Whoever's showing and guarding the picker goes up on the other side, and it becomes a double team. Now not only does the ball have to get out of his hands, but he's completely out of the play, and you'll live with basically who else can beat you. Boston didn't do it early, and you could see Smart's frustration when he came back after the one timeout when Curry hit like his fourth three of the quarter, basically asking anybody if they were going to bother trying to show on the top side of the pick. But then when they did figure it out, and I'm totally with you in something that we'll get to, but the fact that there are certain times when a guy is in a zone and you should do nothing that in your power to alter that until he takes himself out of it. And I think Golden State, in a lot of ways, took themselves out of the game by taking Steph Curry out of the game when they did.
Let's talk about that on the other side. If you want to give your thoughts as well, game one of the NBA Finals, Boston goes into Golden State, comes away with a victory with that dominating fourth quarter, outscoring the Warriors 40-16, plus 24 in the fourth for the Celtics. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. He's on Twitter at Pac-Man Joel. I'm on Twitter at Jeremy Branham. We're all on Twitch at twitch.tv/ESPN975. Todd Kalas will be joining us at 2 o'clock, and then everybody's favorite, your favorite, our favorite, America's favorite, Joey Zanaboni. We talked about him yesterday, those clips of Steven Strasburg's rehab assignment. He's Blanker's favorite play-by-play guy. He's going to be joining us at 1 o'clock, so you can't miss that. We'll get your reaction to the NBA Finals when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN97.5, ESPN92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
White on the drive. Back to Horford for the lead. Boston up by three. Al Horford in his first NBA Finals.
That was not Mike Breen. Not Mike Breen yesterday on the call. It's still weird to me that Mark Jackson has to call Golden State games knowing that he got fired before the dynasty really took off.
It is very, very awkward every time he has to speak about that team. Because if anybody followed the game back then at all and knows, like, this was his team to actually play out, right? To run it back and do everything with. And then he just kind of got all full of himself and got way ahead of himself and didn't, you know, treat and play Draymond Green the right way and was overly religious, which rubbed others the wrong way and went through a whole series. Then he was tape recording assistants who were tape recording him during coaches' meetings, which got really nasty and ugly. And then, you know, before you knew it, he didn't have a job anymore. And now you hear his name surface in job after job after job, even Sacramento recently as this offseason. And yet he's getting nothing. I mean, good on him that he still does a good job doing NBA games. But okay, it's part of a three-man booth that there's a good chemistry between those three.
They asked him yesterday during the Celtics run. It was Jones, right? Mark Jones doing the play-by-play. Boston was in the middle of like this big run, right? I think it was in the fourth quarter, early fourth quarter. And he turned to Mark Jackson and he goes, "What do they need to do to stop this run, Mark?" And Mark Jackson goes, "Well, they need to execute." Thanks a lot, Mark Jackson. I appreciate you doing that. I miss Jeff Van Gundy so much yesterday. It was a little more difficult to watch that game with no Jeff Van Gundy. Jones did a fine job. I can live with Jones. I think Breen's slightly better, but I can live with Jones. Not having Jeff Van Gundy in the booth, though, was hard to swallow. All right, the thing that you mentioned last segment, 713-780-ESPN. Also forgot to mention 1:30, Rusty Harden on a mobile. We'll be joining the Killer Bees. 713-780-3776. What were some of your observations you had watching the NBA Finals yesterday? Here's one thing that's a pet peeve of mine, and we discussed this in our pre-show conversation that we always have, that, look, this. I understand in the regular season you need your rotations. You're watching minutes, especially for guys like Curry, guys like Klay Thompson, even Draymond Green, who's in his 30s. Like, you have a very You're paying very much attention to how many minutes they're playing, what their rotations are, when they're playing. They have a set rotation. One thing that I hate about NBA coaches once you get to the playoffs is they stay married to those rotations.
So they Dusty Baker?
No, Dusty Baker. Yeah, kind of. Because Dusty Baker sits the
to
hot
his guys,
hand,
right? Yeah.
And he's married to his days off that he's already set forth in advance, regardless if you hit five home runs in the last two games. But watching Steph Curry go off, Boston didn't really have an answer for Steph Curry in the first. We mentioned some of the miscues defensively, where Marcus Smart a couple of times going under screens, Robert Williams a couple times when he wasn't even really flashing or showing coming off the pick and roll. No hedge there. He was sagging off at the elbow, much like Draymond Green was sagging off Al Horford all night. And then all of a sudden, because Steve Kerr has this rotation where he sits Steph Curry at the start of every single second quarter. What did I say?
Steph Kerr. I know Steve likes him. I don't think they're related.
Yeah, I mean, you can see why I would make that slip. A very easy mistake to make. But Steph Curry sitting on the bench while he's red hot, 21 points, and because Kerr is married to his rotation, he allows two things to happen. One, Curry, obviously, is going to cool off a bit because he's taking a seat. And then whenever he came back into the game, the Boston Celtics figured out what they were trying to do defensively. I didn't like how Kerr didn't try to optimize those minutes early in the second quarter.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people, the devil's advocate side of it, is going to say, hey, look, you can't drain the tank on Steph Curry in the
Sit
first half. But I
Sit
think
him later
that
in the second quarter, once he cools off.
The point I'm trying to make is that you don't have to run him for the whole second quarter. Mm-hmm. You just run him for, you know, the first couple minutes until either he calls out or the shot starts to go a little wayward after he was making everything. And or if Boston really starts putting pressure on him to where you realize he has to overexert himself. But there's nothing that would hurt that team if he gives you the first 3 minutes of the second quarter and gives you even one or two more threes or one or two more overplays by the defense that allows him to get an easy basket for somebody else, to where it could be the difference between a double-digit lead in the first half where you start demoralizing the Celtics or giving them the ray of hope that you sit down the only hot player on the Warriors. And then when he comes back in, like you said, they're better prepared for how they want to defend him, and they just go to town. What is that face for?
We got some breaking news.
Oh.
In the city of Houston. A Houston Astro has signed, according to Jeff Passan, a contract extension to stay with the Houston Astros for the next six seasons.
Kyle Tucker?
Nope.
Yordan Alvarez.
Yes, yes, yes.
Boom.
Yordan Alvarez has signed a six-year, $115 million contract extension to stay with the Houston Astros. Jeff Passan. Now, look, this is the deal that they're trying to get done with Tucker, where you're buying out a few of the arbitration years, and then you're also buying out a few of the free agent years. These are the deals that I absolutely love, and James Click immediately gets huge marks from Branham. Passan says sources familiar with the deal tell ESPN contract kicks in next season. Biggest contract ever for a DH and $26 million a year for three free agent years. So the 6 years, they're buying out the 3 years of Yordan's arbitration, and then they're also buying out 3 years of his free agency. James Click just, this is a
That's
10.
A win.
This
That's
is a
big
10.
Win.
10
That's
out of 10
a big
out of 10.
Win. And the fact that you're doing it ahead of schedule. He obviously wanted to stay here. He feels very comfortable here. It's a good environment for him. It's a good contract for him. It's a win for the Houston Astros. Well done, James Click.
This is a really nice move for James Click. Let's talk a little bit more about this at 12:30. Clarence wants to get in here, but we'll have some more reaction on the Astros signing Yordan Alvarez to a six-year deal coming up at 12:30. Let's get Big C in here, though. 713-780-ESPN. He wants to talk some NBA Finals. Big C, you're in the HRMP listener line with the Killer Bees. You're in the Hive. You know that. What's up, man?
Happy Friday, gentlemen.
What's up, Clarence?
It looked like, from my point of view, from the eye test, that the Warriors were playing a lot of man-to-man in that game. Like, they were fighting through screens to stay with whoever they were guarding the entire time. And by the time the full quarter came around, they were just winded. I don't know if it was the rest that they had in between the last game and this game or whatever it was. But by the time the full quarter, they didn't look like the Warriors. They looked like when they played that one little blip, when they played Memphis, when he got beat by like 100.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just acting lackadaisical and no sense of urgency. Like, they came out on the house of fire, and then all of a sudden, they're fighting through screens, and give credit to Boston. They made the adjustments. But it just didn't look right. The whole thing, like, Steve Kerr just like, we're going to play this entire game, playing man-to-man. And we'll see what happens after that.
I think it's a good
you
call.
Tell me, Joe.
Well, and obviously, thanks for the call, Clarence. And Jeremy and I are both going to can chime in on. Look, I don't think most teams don't want to play zone as their primary defense, but most teams, what they want to do is they run a switch and rotation defense because the NBA is so fast paced now and there's no concentration on the post players as much unless you're like a Joel Embiid. So the guys just rotate. So it's just rotate to the next open guy on offense, you know, contest on the perimeter, rotate to the next guy, station to station kind of things. It looked like early on, Marcus Smart was expecting rotations and switches that weren't happening, and on top of that, they weren't showing on the screen. I don't think Golden State's a team that plays a ton of zone, but I do think just like their offense is predicated on movement, their defense got real stagnant with no movement at all. They got caught on their heels, and then Boston got hot. Let's just be honest. Boston, as hot as Marcus Smart, of all people, was the guy that was hot early carrying the Celtics. When Jaylen Brown turned it on in the fourth quarter, there was no turning off the Celtics because now they had the range no matter what Tatum was doing, and everybody was free-stroking shots. White got off early, Horford got off throughout the game, and then Brown in the fourth quarter was the difference maker to kind of all compliment Smart.
Warriors did play quite a bit of zone against the Mavs, which is very uncharacteristic in the
especially
NBA.
Especially with Luka, where you just think that's a one guy that you double.
Yeah, they were playing a lot of box and one, which is really weird. You never see that in the NBA, and Jason Kidd was saying how it's a compliment, you know, to their offense and how they had open looks, they just didn't knock them down. I don't think you can do that with the Celtics. In fact, I saw one possession, I think it was in the fourth quarter, it was definitely in the second half. Well, I think it was after a timeout, because after timeouts, sometimes, especially in college ball, you don't see it much in the NBA. You'll switch up a defense for a possession to try to get the offense out of sync. They showed a zone defense against Boston. I think Horford hit a three, and then immediately they were out of it the very next possession. You can't do that with Boston. I think they shoot too well, especially with the nights that Horford and White were having for the Celtics. Now, I think Big C is on to a point about the legs and the fatigue, because if you look at the Warriors, they don't have the bench that they normally have. Like you mentioned Jordan Poole, who was pretty much a non-factor. In fact, I think it'd be better if he did disappear instead of the four turnovers he had in the 25 minutes and his plus 19 in 25 minutes. They got nothing from their bench yesterday. I know Porter hit a couple of threes. He had four threes, but they got next to nothing out of their bench. Klay Thompson played 39 minutes, who is slow and is coming off injury. Steph Curry played 38 minutes. Wiggins played 35. Draymond Green played 38. I think Big C's onto something. I think that they were fatigued there in the fourth quarter, but on top of that, too, they were stunned. It was the whole Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan, so you get punched in the face. They were stunned. They were on sea legs because Boston was punching them left and right, throwing haymakers left and right. I think fatigue played, but I also think they were absolutely stunned with the Celtics' fourth quarter.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, I understand you're not in. You don't have your game legs. It's just the question that I have is how quickly can you get them back? Because they can't. You know, they've got a day where they can practice hard, but I don't think that I would suggest that during the finals. I believe that it's going to be more of the game plan changing than it is anything that they're going to do to kind of improve their legs. The one thing that I noticed about Poole, Jeremy, that was very frustrating to me was we know that the offense for the Warriors is predicated on ball movement and player movement. And Poole, every time he touched the ball, was going one-on-one. He was trying to make three dribbles between his legs, trying to shake guys, you know, one-on-one on the perimeter. And the rest of the Warriors, who are normally cutting and screening, were standing and watching. And I don't think that's the best option for your offense if you're Golden State.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It is a Frankie's Friday Fire. Keep that in mind. You know that by now on a Friday. So we're giving away $50 to whoever brings the heat today, whether it's calling, that's more work on you, B-Mac, whether it's the text, whether it's the Twitch, whether it's the Twitter. You bring the heat, whoever does it the best, $50 to Frankie's Italian Kitchen is yours. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, let's talk about this contract extension. James Click not sitting on his hands. He signs Jordan Alvarez to a 6-year, $115 million contract extension. Immediate reaction next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
This did not exist.
Oh my goodness, this is crushed way up there towards Mount Davis. Off the facade of the second deck.
Jordan Alvarez, we're going to see a lot of those in the coming years because Jordan Alvarez has signed, according to Jeff Passan, who calls him a DH, a six-year, $115 million contract extension. Sources tell ESPN the contract kicks in next season. Biggest contract, Passan's words, ever for a DH, and $26 million a year for the three free agent years. Astros, of course, locking up a great hitter. So Yordan Alvarez was about to look at his first year of arbitration. He would have had 3 years of arbitration. Then, of course, after those 3 years of arbitration, Yordan Alvarez would have been eligible to become a free agent. These are the contracts that I love, because you sign a young player, Yordan Alvarez, 24 years old. You buy out the arbitration years, which you know are going to be expensive anyways, because Yordan Alvarez is a very good player. Probably, it goes up kind of on an escalator. Mm-hmm. So I would probably say it starts at maybe 12 to 15, escalates 18, 20, and then probably by that third year, somewhere around $25 million. So you give your – this is why Yordan Alvarez signs it, because you give him extra money for those 3 years, and then in turn, you get the 3 years of when he would be a free agent. Yordan Alvarez is currently soon to be 25 years old. What is the thing that we talk about a lot? Do not sign players into their mid-30s. So this is a contract. This is much like the Alex Bregman contract, if we're being completely honest, where you buy out the arbitration years, you buy out 3 years of free agency, and Yordan Alvarez cannot enter free agency until he is 31 years old. This, in my opinion, Blankers, a 10 out of 10 for Astros owner or Astros GM James
Cook. No question about it, Jeremy. You look at it and you think about all of what could be for this Astros team, and the reason why it's not just about the short term, it's the long term, is because you still have Yordan, you still have Kyle Tucker, you still have basically 4/5 of a starting rotation that is under contract, a team control for the foreseeable future, that are going to be young, inexpensive, and effective because they've shown to do all three of those things so far. So you were in a good place. This makes you in an even better position, because now not only is it good for the franchise in locking up one of the two key pieces of your future, but it's big because now other free agents and guys that are looking at teams to play for as they get into their free agent years or want to play for a winning team are going to go, well, depending on, you know, regardless of what happens with Altuve and Bregman and guys like that, I'm looking at a team that's still going to have their key pieces in the middle of the lineup, a good starting rotation, and plenty of flexibility, and no state tax in a place where they like to win in Houston. I'm going to look at that too. So it's a win-win-win across the board. This is a great move for Click and for Crane. They should not be done by any means in focusing on this season, but to get this done now for the future is a big move for the Astros.
We also heard the rumors that the Astros were doing, like, having conversations with Kyle Tucker, because Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez are on the same, like, you know, pace to be free agents, because Tucker is going to be facing arbitration for the first time this offseason as well. And we saw the rumors that the James Click was talking to Tucker about it as well. I would still be having those conversations, but I don't love that it came out and the deal wasn't done. Like, the first time we heard James Click and Yordan Alvarez talking contract was he signed a six-year, $115 million deal. Passan is saying that it's the biggest contract ever for a DH, even though Yordan plays left field a lot. Now that he has signed this contract even more than I normally say, I say this a lot, Yordan Alvarez is such a good offensive player. Now that he has $115 million next to his name beginning next season for the next 6 years, I do not want to see Yordan Alvarez play defense. Do not let him touch a baseball glove. Just give him the bat, let him step in the box, and let him hit Yordans left and right for the next six seasons.
So you're just confident.
He's Big Poppy.
He's just going to stay there. I was going to say, he's David Ortiz, the next generation.
Just fill him into the lineup card, cleanup spot, DH spot every single day.
And I'm fine with that. Look, I think the ideal solution when you want to get another bat into the lineup, especially when you got an aging guy like Michael Brantley in left field, is you'd like to clear the DH spot and have him in the field. The most important thing for this Houston Astros team is just everything that he brings to the table. And you look at the Oakland game the other day on an 0-2 pitch to clear the bases with a double, because he knows the zone. He can hit for average. He obviously hits with a ton of power. He's one of the top three in the league in terms of exit velocity off the barrel. And that's something that the Astros lineup can sorely afford to miss out on for any length of time. So you're right, in terms of the development and possibly playing winter ball and learning first base or working on his defense, I'm totally with you, because of the fact that there's a history of problems with the lower body, with the knees, with the legs, and you need him in the lineup, in the middle of your lineup so badly, that I'm fine just leaving him at DH and realizing, hey, James Click, this is where he's going to be and solidify that position. Worry about first base and other positions in the outfield with somebody else.
There's two angles I want to look at this Yordan extension from. First, the first one is the Like, there's a certain crowd of Astro fans that with the, you know, George Springer walking, Gerrit Cole walking, Carlos Correa walking, Bregman not being the same Bregman, Yuli not being the same Yuli, Jose Altuve, who's now in his 30s, Verlander, who's very old, that they feel like the window is starting to close, right, with where the Houston Astros are. I like this new foundation that they're being able to build. Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker in the middle of the order. Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker in the middle of the order is about as good of a middle of the order you're going to find in all of Major League Baseball. You mentioned the young pitching as well. Fromber's 28, but I think you can put him in that conversation, whether it's Luis Garcia, whether it's Javier. We'll see what happens with Hunter Brown. He needs to work on his command a little bit. But I like the new core for the Astros. So where it does look like the window could be closing, like on the previous core of the Houston Astros with Bregman, Springer, Altuve, Correa, I really like this new core, and I feel like that window is opening when you look at it from the young players' perspective. I love Yordan, I love Tucker, and I love this young pitching staff as well. So I don't see the Astros window closing anytime soon.
No, that's the beauty of all this. In terms of what it means for the fan base, what it means for the people that, you know, care about this team most outside of the people that work at Minute Maid Park, is the fact that you want the run to continue. You want to do everything in your power to be a winner and consistently continue to be one, to basically, you know, prove the rest of the country wrong, show that, you know, this is one of the best franchises in baseball. You've got all the pieces to do that. And thankfully, it looks like there's a way to find a meet in the middle in terms of Yordan didn't ask for too much and the Astros didn't offer too little. They found a way to meet in the middle, and like you said, what we've always said that we've heard their philosophy is no long-term deals at massive amounts of money. This kind of is the best meet-in-the-middle resolution. You hope Kyle Tucker's right behind. Yeah. You hope that his agent can be open to it too. You hope that this is a deal that they're willing to do. Give Kyle a little bit more early on so that you can have him longer and for more years. And hopefully that's then you move on to the next positions and the next areas to focus on.
All right, the other angle I want to look at it from, too, and I thought of another one, James Click, Astros GM, because he took a little bit of egg on his face whenever he didn't sign Carlos Correa, especially to the contract that he signed him for. I was right there on the criticism. I like the short-term deal. I like the opt-outs. I thought that that was something they should be looking for. Now, Jeremy Pena has proven James Click to be very right? He's been very accurate in that assessment of letting Correa walk even for the short-term deal, but $35.1 million a year too much whenever you can have Jeremy Pena on the league minimum. That looks like it is working a third of the way into the season. As we evaluate James Click now, after getting Yordan Alvarez signed for the next half a dozen seasons for the Houston Astros, how do we view the Astros GM now?
It better. I'm not going to say, you know, that I'm 100% sold on him. Because as I said, it's how you judge the moves. And I've said even before the year started, when they got the new collective bargaining agreement done and they got all this surplus of money, when he made the decision, which you and I were both on board with, to let Correa walk, it's what are you going to do next? You had to have money earmarked for him regardless. You can't just sit on your laurels and your pocketbook and your checkbook and say, we're good the way we are, because this team's too good not to try and turn every stone necessary until you figure out you got the best chance to win another World Series title. So I'm waiting between now and the deadline. But this is the first step in the right direction for the future. This is a great move for the future of the Astros. My main concern is for this season. I want to see them do more this season. They don't have that many holes to fill. That means it should be even more of a focus. We said first base is kind of new on the horizon because Pena made you forget about worrying about shortstop. But we know that in terms of position players, we're watching Jake Meyer's return and how it affects what they're going to do in center field. We know that as good as the machete is, we got to look at the catcher position. If Yuli continues to struggle, first base, those are the three areas of the infield and outfield and on the field we're going to look at. For me, it's also the bullpen. And again, the ERA is one thing in May and June, but when you're starting to play good teams every single night in the playoffs, when there is no tomorrows in a lot of cases, I believe the back of the bullpen has to be better.
The old saying is you can never have enough arms, right? Right. Even me, who's more, you know, comfortable with where the bullpen is at than you are, you know, you can never have enough arms, especially when it comes to the postseason and relief pitching, and the bullpen comes into play even more than it does in the regular season. 713-780-ESPN. I really like where James Click is at. I think the decisions, we look back at James Click, the Ryan Pressly still is one that doesn't really, you know, I don't really love that one as much, but he's still pitching effectively. Even the players that we talk about that are struggling, Yuli Gurriel's contract is done this season. I know people always point to Alex Bregman's struggles as well, but that was actually a deal that Luno did before him. And I still think Alex Bregman, his on-base percentage plays. James Click is pointing in the right direction for me. I like that he's being aggressive this season in terms of trying to sign some of his young players, and I think that he is a shrewd baseball general manager. What say you? What do you think of James Click? What do you think of the 6 years given to Yordan Alvarez? Anybody have anything bad to say about it? It is a Frankie's Friday Fire. $50 to Frankie's Italian Kitchen is on the line. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, there's one more angle I want to look at in terms of the Yordan Alvarez contract extension. Also, there's an 80-year-old commentator in Major League Baseball, Jim Catt, who is calling a potential AL Cy Young contender an offensive name. Is it offensive? We'll discuss next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It is a Frankie's Friday Fire. You bring the heat. You get $50 to the fine Italian kitchen known as Frankie's Italian Kitchen. 713-780-ESPN. They're
all
moving to a new place too, right?
They're moving to it. So the old place is closed. The new place is not yet open. It should open sometime this month.
Nice.
So you win the gift card. It'll be at the new place. We'll let you know when the new place opens, but obviously well worth it. They can't wait. Chris is just talking about all the different ways that it's going to be an amazing place to hang out, eat great food, and catch a lot of live entertainment.
Yeah, that'll be great. So you bring the heat. We'll buy you a dinner. $50. Frankie's Italian Kitchen. 713-780-ESPN. So Yordan Alvarez signing the 6-year extension, $115 million. It buys out the 3 arbitration years, and it buys out his first 3 years of free agency. I love deals like this. I love when general managers do it. And I hope that Kyle Tucker is next. Now, the last angle I wanted to look at it from was a lot of people call Jim Grain cheap. After he didn't pay the man, after he didn't pay Carlos Correa, after he let Correa walk, after he let Springer walk, after he let Garrett Cole walk, I never thought he was cheap. I'm curious what you think, but does this change your mindset? Does it change the mindset of those that have called Jim Crane cheap?
I didn't call him cheap, but as you know, I always want him to redirect the funds, right? I understand the logic of, and you know, we've covered it over and over on this show, the long-term deal for the 10 plus years at the maximum amount of money or close to it, almost always does not work out for the team. And we look at Pujols, Albert Pujols, we look at the first baseman for the Tigers, Cabrera.
Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah, you look at a lot of different guys that we've brought up on the show, and you say, look, it's nice to say you want to wrap up and be loyal to your guy. But it also, there's a sensible way to do it. So it wasn't about, and we agreed with, letting Correa move on if they were going to require 10 years and all the money it was going to take. But then it was about repurposing the dollars so that it made sense. This makes sense. This isn't like a home run win for either side. So I don't think that the Astros like overspent or overextended. This is like right where that needs to be in terms of the length of the deal, the amount of money. He didn't max out. They didn't max out. So I don't think he was cheap before. This just seems like a very Astros-esque move in this new Moneyball movement with analytics and the Astros. But I think that it makes sense simply because you're getting him in the prime of his career. He's already proven that he is not going to regress. It looks like, you know, it's all systems go. He's not going to break down or really struggle at the plate. So it's a smart move to make. We'll see how it translates towards other moves that they make because we still know that they have a surplus of cash. And that they still have some areas they can focus on.
This doesn't affect at all this year's payroll.
No.
This contract, obviously, and of course, goes into play next season. So whenever you look at the payroll this season and then look at the competitive balance tax, the Astros still have wiggle room, quite a bit of wiggle room. If they want to add some salary at the deadline, maybe you take a rental on as well. Do you think that the fact that Carlos Correa was not signed, I mean, even if it was a short-term deal, it's $35.1 million this year, next year, the year after that, at least you're on the hook for it. Now, he did have the player option. He could have opted out. He can opt out after the first year. He can opt out after the second year. And the third year, I think, is even a player. Well, they're all player options. Do you think that the fact that he's not on the payroll for the Astros, he's not on the books in the coming years, do you think it influences this contract here that you were able to get something
done? Oh, absolutely.
Done?
I think that's part of when I said that you earmarked money for Correa that's no longer going to be spent on Correa. It's how do you repurpose it?
Mm-hmm.
Some of it can be repurposed for this season, but for the long term, at least from an Astros fan perspective, it shows you're committed to a longer run of trying to stay successful, because you're wrapping up guys now so that they can be effective for the short term and also for later when the heyday Astros are going to be fading. Altuve, Bregman, those type of guys.
Core four, call them.
Yeah, I mean, Correa's already gone. Springer's already gone. Brantley obviously probably won't be back next year.
Bregman's not himself.
Yeah, I mentioned Bregman. So I think that this is you're creating your new core that you're going to build around. And I think that that's what it means that when I was focused on it early. Spend the money. I don't care how you spend it. If you're doing some of this to spend it for later, that's great. But now spend some now, too, so that they have the best chance to win for the next year or two when you have Verlander still looking like vintage Verlander for 2 years. And you've got a ton of talent still on the roster, like Altuve playing great baseball, and the guys that you still have.
I don't think that it doesn't hurt, right? Like, the fact that you don't have $35 million on your books next year doesn't hurt when it comes to this contract extension. I'm of the belief, though, that you should have been looking at this type of deal for Yordan Alvarez, for Kyle Tucker, even if you had Carlos Correa on the books. Because it is a wise business decision whether Correa is here or whether or not Correa is here. But it certainly doesn't hurt, so it's hard to have much pushback on that. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Now Alvarez has signed the extension. Do you think Tucker deserves more money? That's from Roderick, and he hashtags it Frankie's Friday Fire. I believe that they're probably going to be worth around the same amount of money. 6 years, $115 million. What was the average? Right around $27 million a deal. Whenever you're buying out the arbitration years especially, I think they're going to be very similar in terms of average annual
I can tell you
value.
Whether or not. I can tell you if you're Tucker's agent, the first thing that you're going to do is say, look, I saw what you gave Yordan. It's great. My guy plays defense. He plays defense. He plays better defense than most. He's an above average outfielder by analytics and by awards given at the end of the season. We think we should get a little bit more. And obviously, just like a Matt Stafford contract, but he wasn't the best player in the NFL, when your contract comes up, makes a difference. And like you said, as a baseline, I'm using Yordan, but now I'm up after, or I'm the next guy in line. I don't want to make what the last guy made. I need to make a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that that's probably from an agent perspective right there. And they're going to be, look, our guy plays really good defense. Yeah, your guy's only the DH. But I think that should be very similar if Tucker does get a deal done. Matt in Lincoln brings up a great point. Can you imagine how much Yordan would cost in 3 years? Once he enters free agency, if he's playing at this same point.
And stays healthy.
$40 million a year?
I was going to say, could be $300, $400 million a year if he could continue still young. And he could continue to put up these kind of numbers. That's
why inflation. Have you seen the prices these days?
It kind of surprised me that, from his perspective, he was willing to sign this quickly.
He wanted the guaranteed money up front. He wanted the big money up front, which, I mean,
this is rare.
I don't think it happens quite a bit nowadays.
So I'm saying this is rare that a guy has the potential to if he just keeps playing his cards right, that he could end up being a Bryce Harper, Carlos Correa free agent, or a Manny Machado a couple of years ago, or the fact that the Padres did what they did for Tatis Jr. well before they had to.
Yeah,
it's rare that the guy that sees that he hasn't had any hiccups to where you except for an injury, but you really believe this is a guy that's headed for bigger things each and every time he grabs a bat, would go, yeah, I'll just wrap it up now.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It's unusual. Let's put it that way. It's unusual.
I don't believe Yordan's going to make as much money doing this contract that he could have made if he just lives
played
through arbitration,
right,
enters free agency in 3 years. I certainly do think that he gave up some money here.
But security is important because injuries do happen and other things pop up, and sometimes guys do fall into slump.
And he's had some knee surgeries, right?
Yeah.
And I think he likes being in Houston too. I think the most recent example, at least from an Astro perspective, of this type of deal is Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman signed a contract right around his arbitration years, bought out the arbitration years, bought some years of free agency, and it's the contract that Alex Bregman's currently on. Remember Yordan Alvarez was traded to the Houston Astros by one Los Angeles Dodgers for
Josh
one.
Fields.
I was trying to pull up a Josh Fields wellness check to see what he's up to recently.
Farming?
The last time, maybe.
A country
music album?
The
last time he pitched in a professional baseball game was 2019. So I don't know what Josh Fields is up to these days.
The anniversary was, I want to say, a week ago. Everybody on Astros Twitter was retweeting the
August
tweet.
August 1st.
When they announced the tweet, they had the anniversary of the trade.
Well, I think they just retweet that when Yordan hits a home run.
They were retweeting it all over the place, going one of the greatest unsung memories in Houston Astros history.
It was I saw that recently.
Yeah, they were popping up a lot.
Yeah, but it was August 1st, 2016.
Really? Okay.
I don't know what Josh Fields is up to. If you know what Josh Fields is up to, let us know. 713-780-ESPN, because he's been traded. almost 6 years ago now for Yordan Alvarez, who just signed a 6-year extension. I was having some fun with Baseball Savant yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yordan Alvarez is a freaking stud. Like, I think he's a little bit underappreciated. I don't think he's underappreciated from Astro fans and in the city of Houston because we know what we got in Yordan Alvarez. I believe he could be one of the most underrated hitters in all of baseball. Like, I don't want to bore you with the nerd stats that I like to look into, but this dude is like in the 99th and 100th percentile in almost every single advanced offensive metric. The dude is an absolute offensive stud that's 24 years old, and he's locked up for the next 6 years. I can't give enough glowing remarks about James Click and this extension for Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah, look, kudos to Click. And it's a start, right? I mean, it's focused on the future, but it's a hell of a good start towards keeping the Astros at the top of the heap in terms of what they're going to do and what they're willing to do to make sure that they stay consistently on a winning path. Like I said, now to me, it's going to be more about what are you going to do this season? You know, for Kyle Tucker's obviously the other shoe that has to drop in terms of the future. But for now, you know, for me now, the focus even more so is pointed towards what are you going to do to improve this team this year?
I don't think that Tucker's going to sign an extension. And that's because of the reports that came out of it and it not getting done. Like the fact that you talked about it.
Are you with me that the Astros leaked it?
I don't know. I don't know. I think it could have been both sides.
I don't think the agent leaks it because it's a bad look if the agent starts considering taking that kind of deal.
Where he wants more money.
Where he wants more money.
I could see both sides. I could see both sides.
I think the Astros leaked it because they want their fan base and everybody to believe they're trying. Yeah. They're trying to do, you know, they're making the effort to keep their guy.
And then they signed Yordan. So that's another kind of the twofold part of that conversation, right? Where, look, we're trying with Tucker, and look, now we executed with Yordan Alvarez. 8437, can't believe they were able to lock him up for that much, but I do not want to see him playing in the field anymore. Strictly a DH from now on after this. Do whatever you can to make sure you maximize the most out of this. That's where I'm at, too. Like, you're signing Yordan Alvarez for $115 million. Like, whenever Carlos Correa signed for his $35 million, $5 million of it was for his bat, $10 million of it was for his offense, or for his glove, and then the other $20 million was for his mound visits. We all know that by now.
Of course.
Yordan Alvarez signing to a $115 million contract, like if it's a pie chart, how much of that $115 million are you trying to find offense? I would say $114.9 million of those dollars. So I'm not playing him on the field that could sacrifice his bat. I'm in agreement with you, 8437. Pessimistic Chad saying, is Bregman the next Morgan Insberg? That's meant as a burn, but I don't think it's that terrible of a comp, to be honest with you.
Why, he's to become a pitcher?
No, that was Jason Lane.
That's right, Jason Lane.
That was Jason Lane.
Didn't Morgan Ensberg try it, too?
I don't think so.
You sure?
He was a minor league manager. I think he was definitely trying to be a manager for a while. I could be wrong.
I know you're
there.
Right that Jason Lane for sure tried it.
Yeah, because I think he was with the Skeeters at the time.
Yep.
They weren't the Space Cowboys yet.
That was Tracy McGrady's Skeeters, buddy.
Yeah, he had a dominating performance. Mm-hmm. They've had a lot of talent go through the Sugarland.
He's had
a lot
of Hall of Famers.
Is he?
You know, it's not the Walk of Fame, but they had Jesse Barfield's kid for a while that was
Jason
used to be a top prospect, yep. But when you walk on the concourse, they have like a kind of like a Wall of Fame, and Tracy McGrady's pitching performance was up there.
I mean, it was probably one of the best nights in terms of gait that they've had
believe
at
it.
Constellation Field. They had a Hall of Famer on the mound. Basketball Hall of Famer on the mound. Eric the Driver, Yordan, Goldschmidt, and Jose Ramirez are the three most underrated players nationally. Home fans know how good they are, but they almost get no recognition in the national media. Jose Ramirez is unbelievable. I love Jose Ramirez. Paul Goldschmidt's a little bit long in the tooth.
I was going to say, he's a little older. Obviously, he's got the hometown ties here and everything like that. But yeah, he's been there, done that. Let's not forget, he had a pretty good career at Arizona. Before he went to the Cardinals, I'm not so sure he's young, but he's definitely having a hell of a season.
I called a couple of college baseball games that he played at Texas State.
Is that
there
right?
In San Marcos. Yeah, he was a really good hitter back then. Still is. 3403, Insberg's high and potential never match up to Bregman. That is true. Bregman has two top five finishes in the AL for MVP. Just not going to get back to that point. I think what the texture was referring to where Insberg had that peak, then kind of fell off a little bit. I think we are seeing that from Alex Bregman, unfortunately. Still a good offensive player. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, Joey Zanaboni. We heard him yesterday. He's the play-by-play voice for the Fredericksburg Nationals, the one in Virginia, not the one in Texas. He says some wild things. Blankers loves him. We talk to him next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.